Good afternoon and welcome to today's Community and Regional Affairs hearing. With me is today is Senator Menard. On today's agenda, we will consider the, first of all, we'll bring up Senate Bill 152, which is the legislative approval for Bristol-based sulfide mining. If we get a chance, we'll go ahead and hear one of the other bills that's been previously heard if we can get a quorum. Otherwise, we'll call on Senator French and his staff to introduce Senate Bill 152. After that, Senator French and his aide will introduce the bill, answer questions from the committee, and we'll hear testimony following the committee. And the order that we have the testimony is going to be with Rick Helford, Dennis Scheimert, Lisa Reimers, and Trifon Anguson. And I want to welcome Senator Helford, by the way, to the Committee on Regional Affairs. Senator French, introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Menard. My name is Hollis French. I represent West Anchorage in the State Senate. With me is Kristen Peterson. She's the staffer in my office assigned to this bill. Thank you for hearing the bill, Mr. Chairman. I know you have a busy schedule. SB 152 is designed to help further engage the legislature in development issues in the Bristol Bay Fisheries Reserve. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Reserve was created in 1972 by the 7th Alaska State Legislature to add a heightened level of protection for the Bristol Bay fisheries. At the same time, a provision was put in place to protect the reserve from the potential damage from oil or gas exploration or development. The bill that was passed at that time required that before oil and gas development went forward, that the legislature pass a resolution essentially saying there would be no damage to the fishery there. Now, in a sense, we walk today in the footsteps of giants, Mr. Chairman, because that bill was sponsored by Senator Jay Hammond. And at the time, he had included in earlier drafts of the bill a provision that would have included just the proposal that this bill sets in front of you. So we are, in a sense, finishing the work that he began back in 1972.
Before you go on, I just want to recognize that we have Representative Bryce Edgeman here in the audience, as well as Representative Pete Peterson.
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman. As I said, current law, AS 3805-140F, provides that within the Bristol Bay Fisheries Reserve, a surface entry permit to develop an oil or gas lease or an exploration license may not be issued on state-owned or controlled land until the legislature, by appropriate resolution, specifically finds that the entry will not constitute danger to the fishery. SB 152 would treat large-scale metallic sulfide mining in the exact same way. It does not prohibit mining. It simply adds heightened protection.
The legislature taking that ease. At this time, I'd like to go ahead and because of the interruption, I'd like to go ahead and have, first of all, I want to welcome Senator Ellis to the committee this afternoon, and have Senator Kukesh's staff come on up and just give a short presentation on Senate Bill 147. It was last heard on Tuesday the 21st. Just an abbreviated, and then we'll answer questions. And we'll
Dorothy Shockley, staff to Senator Kukesh.
Mary Schlosser, staff to Senator Kukesh.
Thank you and good afternoon. Senate Bill 147 puts, wrong bill, creates a nine-member Alaska Water and Sewer Task Force to address the estimated 6,000 plus homes in the state without safe potable water and safe sanitation systems. And they'll be responsible for collecting data and information and presenting to the legislature in January 2013.
Do we have any further questions to the bill sponsor? Now, does any more information come forward before after the bill was presented last week? If that's the case, then thank you very much for presenting. Any further questions by members of the committee for the bill sponsor? If not, what's the will of the committee? Senator Ellis?
Mr. Chairman, I move that you report the bill out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Without objection, it passes. At ease. Thank you. the record. Senator French, please continue on with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I was saying, Senate Bill 152 simply treats large-scale sulfide mines the exact same way current law treats oil and gas exploration in the Bristol Bay Fisheries Reserve. We all know that the fishery in Bristol Bay is one of the top producing wild salmon systems in the world and the most lucrative salmon fishery in Alaska. We know that salmon populations are highly vulnerable to even small changes in habitat, water quality. The state of Alaska has never denied a permit to a large-scale mine. And so in light of these facts, legislative oversight and legislative involvement in this process seems like a good idea. There are people here and online that can speak to the science of a sulfide mine better than I can, Mr. Chairman. I do want to note that due to the geochemistry and location of Bristol Bay, sulfide deposits in the headwaters of some of the major rivers that feed the bay run a high risk of polluting the bay if they are mined, which would be a severe detrimental impact on aquatic life. Given the magnitude of the potential risks to the Bristol Bay region and that the impact could potentially be statewide, legislators representing communities from across the state should weigh in, which means that Alaskans, through their representatives, through us, are assured a voice in the decision. The legislature may very well decide to approve the mine after a thorough hearing, Mr. Chairman, but the process should be exacting. Thank you. That's my presentation.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Bill Sponsor? I've got a couple of questions. One, obviously, the mine issues that are going down around Bristol Bay are highly controversial. Where else in the state of Alaska do we have sulfide deposits that would challenge the magnitude that we have down there at the headwaters of Bristol Bay and Nooshagak, that area?
You know, that's the question I'm going to have to leave to other witnesses, Mr. Chairman. I wouldn't want to mislead you. I'm not a geologist, and so my knowledge of where exactly those sulfide deposits are should be better addressed by a witness more competent on that question than I.
And if we continue on, if we were to go ahead and have this bill come into law, I just see that as a slippery slope. What about mines elsewhere in the state of Alaska that may or may not have sulfide deposits that are significant that are out there? Would you anticipate that is going to be the case?
That is an excellent question, Mr. Chairman, and I think the fact that you have a precedent in place for oil and gas operations in this Bristol Bay fishery is exactly where the slippery slope stops. That is, you know, you can go to any constituent, any person, any entity across the state and say, we're merely trying to put mining on the same footing as oil and gas in this one area where so many lives and so many jobs depend on the return of salmon fish every year.
And as you look at some of the issues that deal with the legislature is obviously very politically, if part of the most politically charged body here in the state of Alaska. What, how do you keep politics out of the responsible development as well as development that has made the state and is necessary for resource extraction for that?
You know, Mr. Chairman, you know, I think politics are going to be infused in this issue throughout its life. Really, the question is how do we protect the fish? How do we protect the public process? Mm-hmm. How do we assure the public that we are in accord with any steps taken by the administration on a question this vital?
And as you look at the whole situation, fish is obviously the main issue that we're looking at. And we look at the Bristol Bay fisheries, which has been very instrumental to people in that area that are making a living off there for millennia, and the commercial fishing that's gone in, I think, over 100 years ago. As you look at that, and it's being threatened now, not so much by development, but by farmed fish that may take the whole issue of wild salmon off the market because it's more reliable, it's done in bigger numbers, it's taking over the market fairly quickly. And if we don't allow this fisheries to, or this mining development to continue or to go on, and the fishing goes on its face, is this an opportunity we're missing by allowing this to go on? Or?
You know, I think wild Alaska, your question is about wild Alaska fish and the future of wild Alaska fish. And I think, you know, this bill helps cement it. It helps put the future of wild fish, you know, much, much brighter and much stronger. Let me just share a quick anecdote on this topic. The impact of this mine on fish, not in Bristol Bay, but across the state, was driven home to me in a community meeting I did in Sitka. And the Sitka fishermen there pulled me inside and said, we haven't heard your position on the Pebble Mine. Where are you on this question? Because we're totally against it down here in Sitka, Alaska, because we recognize what happens to our fish in the marketplace if mercury is introduced into Bristol Bay. One drop of mercury in one fish in Bristol Bay means our fish, our Sitka fish, are worth less. And it is as true in Sitka as it is in Ketchikan, as it is up in Nome, as it is on the Yukon River and everywhere else. A tainted Alaska fish hurts all Alaska fishermen.
I totally agree. With that, if there's no further questions, thank you very much for your presentation. Trustee Eads not saying anything? Okay. Let's go ahead and open up for testimony. First, we have Rick Halford from Trouts Unlimited, the Senior Policy Advisor. Senator Halford, go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If you just identify yourself for the record.
I am
who you're with.
Halford. I consult with TU. I've also worked in the last couple of years with National Geographic, British Broadcasting, authors, writers, photographers, basically anyone who is telling the story of what's at stake at Bristol Bay. And I do that willingly. I got kind of drafted first by Bella Hammond and then by Luke Yakovcock. But the bottom line is I do this at the risk of irritating lifelong friends from the other side. I don't think I ever found another mine that I opposed, and this is a different one. It's different by location, by type, by size. But this reserve is a very small change. You have an existing law, and some might come and tell you that they're worried about building an airport, building a school, building a road. They haven't even noticed that they're in an existing reserve. All it stops is oil and gas development. Adding massive sulfide mines of more than a square mile is not something they would notice except in the development of a pebble-type mine. Because the infrastructure is so far, no mine can develop in this area at that cost unless it's a huge mine. It has to be very, very big or nothing. Even the sponsors of this mine, the companies, disagree. The you know, the development was first initiated by Cominco. Cominco sold at less than they had invested. You now have three companies involved, and they all have a different story. Basically, Northern Dynasty is continuously for sale. Their stock has gone from $20 a share a year ago to $7 and something a share today. That stock is the market's assessment of the probability and viability of Pebble Mine, essentially, because they're a one project company. Rio Tinto, and that's really, it's chaired by the one of these big, very successful corporate leaders who has real Alaska experience and education. But Tom Albanese of Rio Tinto doesn't believe that Pebble Mine will ever permit as an open pit mine. He said so publicly, he said so to us. And finally, you have Anglo, who is trying to hold this together and provide some kind of a project against the overwhelming sentiment of the local area. The legislation, as I said, is a very small step. It just brings it back to you. And I think it's important to look at this slide so you see why and what's different about Bristol Bay. That's the status of fisheries in North America. Everything in the colors, green, orange, yellow, they're all threatened. The hatcheries are overcoming a great deal of the southern British Columbia and hatcheries in Alaska. But the real stronghold of a completely viable and totally diverse fishery is Bristol Bay. There is no other place like it left on Earth. It is truly a resource of state importance, of national importance. Half the red salmon consumed in London come from Bristol Bay, that far away. It is a tremendous resource. The area is a phenomenally interesting area in that it's high and yet it's very wet. It's a 1,000-foot plateau in a rolling hill area, and its primary composition is water. It's porous ground material, and groundwater and surface water mix, and Pebble's own data gives you a lot of the information. It is the spawning grounds of two. You know, God couldn't have created a place to test us more, because it's an area that drains into two separate directions in the two biggest drainages of Bristol Bay. The area is, all these, by the way, all the blue are all anadromous waters, and they go right up into the deposit. If you look at the black and the light blue, that's the area of Bristol Bay that could be affected by a disaster in this deposit. The impact is not just on the deposit itself. It's a 100-mile access corridor that is crossing all the streams of the northeast end of Ileana the Lake, the greatest red salmon lake on Earth. It is a tremendous impact just to get to it. And as you know, in one of the very first fuel hauls, there was a spill right on the Ileana River without the effort of the competitors of the hauling company, it would have made it to the river, but it was, I think, 1,400 or 1,600 gallons at Pyle Bay right at the river. That's what that road looks like. And you've got to create a road that, if you see the end of it, that's looking at Williamsport, but they have to go across that bay and then out across those mountains to get to the far end to get to deep water. That's what you have to create an all-weather road on. It's going to have to haul millions and millions of gallons of fuel. It's going to have at least one pipeline. It is a massive project to even comprehend. It would change this area tremendously. That's what that road looks like today. It is very difficult. The hauling company that hauls boats only hauls boats 14 feet wide because they're dragging the gunwale on the rocks on the left, while the outside duals knock rocks down the steep slope on the side. This is what the deposit looks like. The location is very, very critical. This is the deposit, and if you look at that, that's 3,500 feet down. But the characteristics are high sulfur content, deep, and very, very low grade. They say they have 10.8 billion tons. If you mine down to what they say they can mine to is 1/3 of 1% copper equivalent value. This is the size of that deposit in comparison to everything else we look at. You asked about sulfide mines. Green Creek is a sulfide. It's 1/300th the size of Pebble. It's underground. It's very well controlled and very well operated. None of the mines, even Fort Knox, which is the biggest open pit mine in Alaska, can compare in size. It's 1/30th the size. But everything altogether doesn't come anywhere near it. In fact, if you took the largest mine in North America, Bingham Canyon, and put it in that hole, it will only fill it 1/3 full. And that mine is visible from space. That's Bingham Canyon. The thing about Bingham Canyon is it's in a desert, and yet it's polluted 72 square miles of the aquifer underneath it. It's got infrastructure all around it. It's easier to get to, less problems, and it's richer than Pebble Mine. But it still has created a major problem in terms of water. There will be people carrying drinking water in the suburbs of Salt Lake for generations. This is what the actual on-site operation looks like. Those red circles are drill holes. They can be anything from a very short hole to find bedrock for a potential dam to some of them more than 4,000 feet deep. But the area has been tremendously impacted just by the drilling program that's existed so far. This is, on the left-hand side, that's a picture, and you've got a copy of the National Geographic up there, I think. That's a picture of the National Geographic photographer taking the outflow of drilling mud and the drilling fluids out of the settling ponds at the bottom of the hill and the rig in the background. That was taken in September of 2009. The other pictures are what that looks like and what it's been happening to today. Those pictures are this last fall, right before freeze-up. The impact is not without activity. And this is another well. If you look at the right-hand picture, it shows you where this well is relative to Frying Pan Lake. This is a well that I couldn't believe they kept working on, because during the summer I flew over this and I saw them first put out the settling ponds and the holes. There was no rig on it, and I've got a picture in here with another picture that you'll see. This is the National Geographic well. I'm just going to run through these a little faster. But this is what it looked like. This is the well that they did, and there's a series of pictures on this well going all the way around it. This is settling ponds with drilling mud in the surface water. the water in those holes was just exactly that deep, but it was clear water. When they started to pump them, they pumped them full of tailings and drilling mud in the water table. This is the high-tech efforts to capture drilling mud that was running off of a different rig. This is that same rig, and I'm going to kind of try to go through a little bit faster. This gives you some perspective of size, because those locations to the upper left is their main camp. It's less than a mile and a half from the main camp to that well that had been running for 2 years, and yet nothing was done to stop it. It was running artesian water and killing vegetation and creating a lot of biological slime and so forth down the side hill. That's the National Geographic well. The other well is right down below that. These are right in basically the front yard or the main camp. You could, with a little bit of elevation, see them with binoculars from their main camp. And yet they, in the trustee's court case, went in and testified or had an employee testify that he could find no failed remediation anywhere. And the judge believed that and mentioned it in his opinion, actually. It is not something that we want to see continued. The legislative oversight of this bill is a big step in the right direction. The other thing you can do is you have program receipt authority. There needs to be active on-site presence in keeping track of what's going on here. This drilling mud, it says on the packages, hazardous to aquatic life, keep out of sewers, keep out of drainage. They are pumping it directly into the water table. That well that's sinking into the swamp, the lower left-hand picture, basically is about 75 feet from an anadromous fish stream. The water they're pumping into is fishery water. I have enjoyed the effort to try and let people know what's going on in this area, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your hearing the bill. I hope you will do what you can to move it on its way. And again, all it does is bring you to the table in the biggest decision for Western Alaska in the next century. The development of that project in that size, in that location, with that kind of toxic material is the greatest decision those people will face, and I'm certainly glad to be able to work with them.
Any questions? Or is this the end of your presentation?
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to turn the lights back on. Any questions of Senator Helfman or members of the committee?
I would just say, Mr. Chairman, how would the legislature, if it's determined that there's no danger to the fisheries, would we put this out to an in-house review or contract out for?
I would expect what you do is get the best scientific data that you possibly can. And I would hope that you would listen to local people, the local Native Corporation, the Regional Corporation, has opposed this development. About 80% of the local, listen to the science.
Was close.
And try to find out.
What was that final vote? Was it a pretty close vote in the community just recently?
Well, I think you're talking about an initiative in a borough, which is only a small portion of the drainage. Mm-hmm. That initiative was a close vote, but that was, again, a very small portion. It didn't include all the downstream areas that would have been affected. So the biggest community in the area, Dillingham, wasn't included. The Nooshagak wasn't included. The BVNC polling shows about 80% opposed to the development of that project.
That vote was only a 55-45 or 52-48 or something like that. It was a close vote, but that was in a small portion of it.
And that was Igagik Naknek.
It was the Lake and Peninsula Borough. Lake and Peninsula Borough goes from basically Lake Clark down to the bay, but doesn't include the little Bristol Bay Borough, which is just a very small borough right around Naknek. And it goes over to the Pacific side. But again, it doesn't include Kalikinik, Equock, Newstu, Dillingham, Matacotic, any of the areas that would be affected downstream, particularly on the Nooshigak side. But BBNC's polls, the Croatian polls, consistently any poll that we've seen in the region mm-hmm. is at least 70% opposed to the development of the project, and some of them are above 80% opposed.
Well, you're talking about Manicotic. That's way over on the west side. That's almost a Togiak. So
Manicotic is in the drainage, but it's probably Togiak is out of the drainage, sure. Basically.
Senator Menard, I'm sorry I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, my question was just to take off from what your question was, that how can we ensure that politics won't come into play with.
I like that question because it made me think about something that. And I know he was quoting somebody else, but John Kennedy said something about the person not interested in politics is like the drowning man not interested in water. The fact is that politics is the way we do things. The process, it's going to be executive branch politics, it's going to be statewide politics, it's going to be legislative politics. Politics is the alternative to casting bullets instead of ballots. So I wouldn't be afraid of it being politics. That is the process by which we make decisions, and it's justly so. So I think I get a kick out of people saying when it's not their politics that we don't like politics, when it is our politics. We all have lots of politics in our own families.
Mm-hmm. Follow?
Yeah. You left out one. Lobbyists.
I don't have any of those in my family, but sometimes I think my kids are working on it.
Well, I'm glad you cleared up because one of your initial comments had to do with, I think, quote unquote, overwhelming sentiment. And it's my understanding that it was a close vote there initially that came through about a year ago related to that. And I realize that the draw may have been there, but the other side says that the pool of people that voted were not necessarily all there either, but the numbers were a lot closer than.
I think they were a lot closer than the advocates of that ballot initiative expected, but the turnout was a huge piece of the turnout was in the two communities where Pebble is basing their operations. So it was Iliam and New Halen were overwhelmingly represented in that ballot. But I don't think that total election represented anywhere near half the population of the drainage that would be affected. So it was. Probably, if you look at it in hindsight, why would you want to go do a ballot initiative in your weakest area and then mm-hmm. expect it to come out that much different?
Sure. As you go on, looking at another mine that's going on over there, and that's Dowland Creek, why doesn't there seem to be the overwhelming landslide adversity that's there for Dowland Creek as opposed to Pebble?
Well, Donland Creek is owned by the local native corporation.
Sure.
It's not in the incredible. It has fisheries and it has fishery values that should be protected.
Sure.
But it's nothing like the overwhelming jewel that Bristol Bay is.
And I'm not discrediting Bristol Bay with its reds, but they've got Kings going up the Kuskokwim that are going to be heavily affected. And I guess Kings feeding more. Families up on the Kuskokwim, how do you go ahead and justify the effort being put forth to stop Pebble as opposed to people trying to stop Donlin? Because I never hear Donlin Creek being controversial.
Donlin Creek is more controversial than I expected, and I'm not sure why. Because in the initiative that was, 2008, the only area that voted yes after all of the misinformation and the campaigns and $20 million or whatever it was had labeled it the initiative to shut down mining. The only area that voted yes in a higher percentage than Bristol Bay, as I understood the returns, was Bethel. And I was surprised because that's their mine in their backyard. They have the ability through ownership to do a lot more in local hire and a lot more. There's a lot less conflicts. It's smaller. It may have some of the same material problems, but I was surprised that there was as much opposition because I hadn't heard any opposition at all.
As we look at legislation like this and imagine that it happened 100 years ago when Nome was starting to get gold coming out of there, and you go ahead and look at that effect and the effect that mining has had, especially on western Alaska, in the place that I come from in particular, if you had this kind of legislation through back then, do you think we'd be at where we're at? Would you think we'd be where we are today if this kind of legislation was there?
Well, of course, I spent my early years as an air taxi operator flying for miners and prospectors and hunters and fishers, and I spent my time here consistently supporting mining for the same kind of reasons. I don't think I ever ran for office when I wasn't supported by the Alaska miners. And I believe that mining is one of the legs of the stool that allows people to live in a lot of places and be a part of the economic base of a lot of places. So I am not at all opposed to mining. Nome is mining country. It didn't have the resources in conflict. Fairbanks is mining country. It doesn't have the resources in conflict. Those mines and that activity is strongly supported on a local basis. Even though Red Dog has some major environmental problems, it's locally owned, it's strongly supported on a local basis, and the deposit itself was toxic before it was ever mined because it's so rich in the kind of material it is. So they are very, very different. Bristol Bay is the one place where I believe that this legislation is reasonable. And I have not changed the feelings that I have toward most of the other mines in the state of Alaska. I do not know of any other mine that I would oppose. This is a unique situation. The resource on one side is much, much more valuable. The resource to be mined is much, much more dangerous, and the size is beyond our imagination. And it's not what you put into the pebble deposit that makes it dangerous. It's what's already there. When you grind it to a powder, the principal mineral is sulfur that you have left. And that, with air and water, is going to create the acid mine drainage that's going to dissolve the rest of the material that's in that powder into the water column and make it deadly. And there's not a mine.
You don't think the technology is there to go ahead and control it?
It has never been successful in a wet climate anywhere else. It's very, very difficult because you have to do it in perpetuity. This stuff is just as dangerous 1,000 years from now as it is today. Unlike nuclear waste, it has no half-life. It is there. They have actually, because this had been drilled, and there's some in information in Pebble Northern Dynasty's own data, that it looks like this stuff starts to generate acid in something like 40 years. So the tailings that they've put into these ponds, basically they dig a 4x8 hole and they dig a whole series of them to run into each other, but they settle out the tailings and the drilling mud. So the drilling mud that's not supposed to go there is there. But the tailings also, if they happen to be in the deposit, the tailings are probably acid generating in that small spot. Not that that's...
So you're saying that muriatic acid is being made after 40 years?
Sulfuric. Right.
Sulfuric and muriatic are the same thing. And that's what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay. As we look at the legislation, one of the concerns that we have is that if you're going to go ahead and stop a mine of this magnitude with the powers that be that are out there, which are fairly significant within the mining industry, how do we make sure that this doesn't spill out over to what essentially pays all our bills here, which is the oil industry, where you've got to have the legislature approve any kind of oil development that's going to be going on out there? Because they're both extracting a non-renewable resource from the ground, and from what I see, you've got much better control down in the Bristol Bay headwaters than you do up on the North Slope, where you've got a lot more water, a lot more tundra, and those kind of issues where the climate is against you. How do we make sure that this doesn't happen so that we can have responsible development for other industries that are out there besides mining?
I'm glad you asked that question, because onshore oil and gas is really going the right direction. In terms of directional drilling, you can do more for far less impact. Mining has done just the opposite. Because product values have gone up so much, you can mine down to very, very low grade. Low grade ore means much, much more waste per dollar. So although Pebble is huge in terms of dollars when they put the numbers out there, it's also beyond imagination in terms of waste. And you've seen the pictures of how much waste it would be over the top of Anchorage or over the top of somewhere else. I mean, those pictures are real depictions of that high volume of waste. Mining has become much more dangerous. And by the way, it's much less lucrative.
the mining license tax is a net tax, where the oil system is essentially gross tax and product-based taxes. So oil pays 10 times more into the coffers, leaves much, much less waste and damage and surface impact. And as long as it's onshore, I think oil development has proven to be a very good bet for the state of Alaska. But mining of a large sulfide of this size, again, if you look at other locations, I mean, and there are small mines. Greens Creek is a good example of a sulfide that works. But it's an underground mine that's tiny. It's 1/300th the size of the Pebble deposit. But oil works.
So as you look at it now, and if they discover oil, you talk about oil and the development of oil fields that are out there, if they do find oil out in Bristol Bay, are you going to oppose that too?
Well, onshore oil in Bristol Bay I don't think is opposed by, it certainly is opposed by some of the people in the Bristol Bay Coalition, but if it's onshore, I personally don't think it's a real danger. I think right now, the way the existing law works.
I'm not worried about that. Do you remember the question? Answer the question.
I haven't got a problem with onshore oil.
The question had to do with, if they've discovered oil off in Bristol Bay, are you going to oppose it?
Offshore. I probably would oppose offshore oil and gas development in Bristol Bay because of the resources in conflict and because of what else you have to do. We've been through that huge cycle of leases and then buyback and back and forth, and I don't think the risks in Bristol Bay for offshore oil development are worth it.
On a lighter note, as somebody who's retired from the Senate, does that mean our views are going to change once we leave the legislative atmosphere where we become... Whenever I review on some of the issues we've been fighting hard over?
Whenever I think of some of the things that I either believed or did or worked on here, I always have to go back and think, isn't it too bad that we're all too soon old and too late smart?
Senator Halford. Cal Halford, let's ask further questions. Thank you very much for your presentation.
I'm
sorry, Senator Menard.
This is kind of a burden. With the National Geographic.
Mm-hmm.
It says Alaska's choice, salmon or gold. Is there any way at all that you can see why can't we have them both?
And I really appreciate that
argument.
I appreciate that question because that's the argument that's been made in every one of these considerations in the past. And in every one, it was a choice one or the other. I think there's millions of dollars being spent to tell us today that you can have both. But there is no example of a place like Bristol Bay that has the same kind of conditions in this size where you could have both. If you have, and it may take 50 years, but if you mine that size deposit in that volume and create that much waste, I believe you'll have a very substantial long-term negative impact. Remember, this is based on perpetual remediation. I'm not sure that we in one generation have the right to do anything that requires perpetual remediation. That word is almost the word you hear in church versus in terms of the political world. I don't think we have the right to do that to generations yet unborn. So if they could do it without perpetual remediation, and before I, when I was asked to get involved in this, I looked at what could you do to make it work. And there are things, if it were a richer deposit, if you could batch the tailings with a base material that really made it so that it wasn't reactive, if you could cast them into concrete, if it was a 4 or a 5% mine, there'd be lots of things you could do to make it possible. It's a very, very low-grade sulfur mine with gold, copper, and molybdenum. Mm-hmm. And it's the sulfur that's the problem.
And I appreciate that answer, too. But it is true, you have a strong holding there as well. Is that not true? You have several thousands acres out in that area.
And it's my wife's. We have a couple native allotments north of Dillingham. So we have 150 acres, and it's 120, 130 miles away.
Okay, and then the other thing I was going to ask you,
any direct stake other than flying across it.
Have you ever considered as part of your another consultant that's very scientifically educated in this field as you come and
I enjoy flying a lot of the science people around and listening, and just by osmosis you hear what's going on and you learn a lot about it. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't the area of my education. But I think the moral high ground of this issue is local people, the original people of the area, and science. And if those three things are listened to, I believe the right decisions will be made. Mm-hmm. I strongly believe that the national conscience, when people understand what's at stake on the federal level and on the state level, will not allow the Bristol Bay fishery and area to be endangered by this kind of a mine with the national record of this kind of mines. And it's not just old mines. I mean, there's a major study of mines after the joint EIS process that's only the last 25 years or whatever it is. And most of those have failed, the overwhelming majority, and the mitigation measures that were in their EIS proposals have also failed. Mining is a difficult process, particularly in a sulfide. People who are very, very pro-mining and in the industry will tell you, I mean, people like former Commissioner Tom Irwin, he said to me, a sulfide is a very dangerous question.
Follow-up, Senator Bernard. We've got a number of people to go ahead and testify.
I'm very perplexed because I'm a strong supporter of mines. And you know, we talked just the other day, and you said I found one mine that I can't support, and it's the Pebble. So, and yet, you know, my children had a great, rich history of Bristol Bay, Naknek, Igigik, and were commercial fishermen. And so
the first person I ever flew around commercially was a guy by the name of Chuck Hawley. Mm-hmm. Was in his 70s and now, and criticizes the positions I have on this mine. Mm-hmm. He's a wonderful guy. Mm-hmm. I worked with Leo Mark Anthony, Don Stevens, lots of people in this industry. I like those people. Mm-hmm. I like what they do. I had no idea what a huge sulfide mine was. And the thing about mining is everybody that prospects or mine is looking for the one thing that's going to be the mother lode, the greatest thing in the world.
We've had mother lodes in Alaska.
Now somebody finds one, but it's a sulfide, and the danger is more than the rest of the system and the state can bear. And that's too bad. I don't begrudge them their investment. I don't begrudge them their employment. I don't begrudge any of that. And I don't, they are multinational corporations trying to make money. But we have a $400 or $500 million industry that's based on subsistence, that's based on sport fish, that's based on commercial fishing, and salmon feed Western Alaska. Absolutely, from the tiniest microorganisms to the brown bear. And if salmon were gone, you would lose the soul and the people of the entire region.
And I certainly think you understand that, but here at hand is this legislation. Now,
small step just to have you involved in the process.
That's on my comments.
Well, with all due respect, I don't think it's necessarily a small step, because there certainly can be some roadblocks put in there by the legislature that are fairly significant. In fact, against the will, Coastal Zone Management is one of those examples that's out there, where you've got the legislature holding up what 80% of the people across the state of Alaska are in favor of. And that's why I'm so cautious about trying to get the legislature involved, because you start doing that, then what else are they going to be involved with? We're only here for 90 days, and you know, people want to go ahead and do other things that are out there. So, Senator Helfer, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon.
Thank you.
That was a great presentation, by the way. Almost convinced me. Daniel Cheyette. Mr. Cheyette, are you on, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Daniel Cheyette, and I'm a corporate counsel for Bristol Bay Native Corporation. Thank you for inviting BB&C to testify on Senate Bill 152 today. I will read my testimony and then answer any questions the committee may have. Bristol Bay Native Corporation is, by revenue, one of the top three largest of the regional corporations. It's a leading Alaska 49er. It operates more than 30 companies and employs more than 3,500 people nationwide, paying total wages of more than $173 million. BB&C has nearly 600 employees in Alaska who earn more than $43 million in wages. BB&C is an economic cornerstone of the Bristol Bay region, and it takes the responsibilities that come with that position very seriously. For the last 20-plus years, BB&C has paid reliable and increasing dividends to its 9,000 shareholders, established an education foundation that provides vital scholarships for higher education and vocational training, created job opportunities and internships, and advocated on behalf of the economic, cultural, and subsistence rights of our shareholders. BB&C continues this work today in furtherance of the corporate mission to enrich our native way of life. BB&C supports responsible resource development, meaning projects that meet high standards of fiscal, social, and environmental sustainability. These are projects that can provide long-term economic returns without risking or damaging subsistence resources, native culture, or the commercial salmon fishery. The vast majority of households in the Bristol Bay region rely on subsistence fishing for a large percentage of their food. The native people of Bristol Bay in particular are highly dependent on salmon as a food source. In addition, Bristol Bay is home to the world's largest and most important remaining wild sockeye salmon fishery. Commercial fishing is essential to the region's economy. Last year, the industry provided more than 11,500 jobs to the people of Bristol Bay, and those jobs provided more than $164 million in wages. BB&C will not risk this crucial resource for the purpose of developing other resources. After significant research and deliberation, BB&C decided in 2009 to oppose the proposed Pebble Mine project. A copy of the board's resolution accompanies the written materials BB&C earlier submitted to the committee. The massive scope of the proposed Pebble project, the importance and sensitivity of the river drainages in which the Pebble deposit is located, and the known facts about the persistence and permanence of impacts to water quality from such a large-scale metallic sulfide mine led our board to conclude that unrestricted mining of the Pebble ore deposit would present an unacceptable risk of irreparable harm to water, fishery, and wildlife resources of the region. This is not a development that BB&C can tolerate. It's at odds with our corporate mission. Moreover, the proposed Pebble mining project is a development that is at odds with the opinions of our shareholders. In late 2011, BB&C shareholders responded to a survey that gauged support for the Pebble project and BB&C's decision to oppose it. 81%, an overwhelming majority responded that they opposed the Pebble mine and supported BB&C's position in opposition to it. Turning to Senate Bill 152, Bristol Bay Native Corporation supports the bill. It is an important check on large mining development in the Bristol Bay region. It will establish a process through which the Alaska legislature can give careful consideration to the potential for harm to Bristol Bay fisheries as a supplement to the analysis conducted by the Alaska Department of Natural Resources and other permitting agencies. The bill is narrowly tailored to protect the fisheries and waters of the state because it focuses on the enhanced threats posed by large-scale metallic sulfide mines, rather than encompassing all sizes and types of mining or other development. Moreover, the legislation allows for responsible large-scale mining projects to go forward where the legislature finds they pose no danger to fisheries. This approach is consistent with BB&C's practice and long-standing commitment to careful study and scrutiny of proposed development projects in our region, and we support the legislature's effort to do the same. BB&C supports this legislation. In closing, BB&C recommends that SB 152 include legislative findings that speak to the unique, valuable, and irreplaceable nature of Bristol Bay's fisheries. Such findings would add context and support for the bill. BB&C included several examples of potential findings in its written testimony and asked that they, or findings similar to them, be considered and included in the bill. Thank you for the committee's time this afternoon, and I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have for me.
Do you have any questions, Mr. Shayette? I've got one question for you, Mr. Shayette, and that has to do with Bristol Bay Native Corporation. It's obviously made up of stockholders that are native. What's the sentiment of the non-native population of the Bristol Bay area and the area that's involved with this mine?
Your Honor, in addition to the survey that we did of shareholders, we've had other polling done statewide, and two-thirds or more, or a vast majority, over 70%, ranked other industries, fishing and oil and gas, favorably, but less than 32% said they had a positive opinion of the Pebble Mine. So our statewide polling has shown that support also is there for other industries, but not Pebble.
Okay, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. If no further questions, we'll go on to Lisa Reimers. Ms. Reimers,
Hi, thank you,
are you on, ma'am?
For having me on today. I could appreciate Rick Helford saying that he would like to hear from more locals. My name is Lisa Reimers. I was raised in Iliamna. Iliamna is my home. That is where all my family still lives. Iliamna is 50 miles from the proposed Pebble project. We have seen the opportunities Pebble has provided for our communities. And to bring up a comment about BVNC saying they have all these jobs, they do not provide jobs out in the villages in the BVNC to the BVNC shareholders. A lot of their jobs are out of state. So, you know, I just wanted to comment on his comment that he made about that. Pebble has given us, our locals, opportunities for jobs with just the exploration alone. Our community has a high cost of living for fuel and food. We do not live off totally off subsistence like our parents did, which did not require fuel, snow machines, Honda, guns, etc. We have a choice for subsistence, and we live in a Western society, lifestyle which requires a job to do these activities. If we don't have an economy, we'll create our own cultural genocide in our communities. If we do not create jobs, we see Pebble as an opportunity. We are tired of everyone trying to speak for us. We want to make our own decision on Pebble. A lot of locals have sold their fishing permits to help pay for surviving in the winter with basic necessities. Again, we need jobs and an economy. I speak today in opposing such bill SB 152 that try to change existing process. If process has problems, legislators should fix it. I'm not supportive of introducing more politics to decision making. One last thing, I'd like to invite you to Iliamna to talk to the locals that actually live there, and you do not have to fly over with binoculars to see it. It's very open. Everybody's open about talking about Pebble and the project and the opportunity. Thank you.
Do we have any further questions of Ms. Reimers by members of the committee? If not, Ms. Reimers, if I could just ask you a question. As you look at the jobs that are there, you talked about that are so important for us to go ahead and survive here as the Western culture has overtaken us up here. What happens if there is a problem with the mine and the mine shuts down? For example, what happened in Nome with the Rock Creek mine and all those jobs went away after the ground has been disrupted? What are your thoughts on that then?
Well, the way I see it, that you know, with the fishing industry, with commercial fishing, you know, we can't depend on that any longer. I mean, that's how I grew up. We survived off commercial fishing. I fished on the Bristol Bay, on the beaches with my parents. And after that went away, you know, we had to find a different job. So I think we're pretty adaptable to, you know, moving on and finding different opportunities. But right now, we don't live off subsistence. A lot of the locals don't depend on commercial fishing. Before Pebble even came in, we were looking for other opportunities. We approached BB&C to help us. And their response, Jason Matrokin's response, was, if you have a $20 million project, he goes, we'll come in and help you. Otherwise, you're basically on your own.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Ms. Reimers.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Next, we have Trifon Anguson. Mr. Anguson, are you on, sir?
Well, good morning. Good afternoon, Senator Donage and members of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Trifon Anguson, and I'm the chairman of the Alaska Peninsula Corporation, APC, and APC is a merger of five village corporations, of which two are located in the Iliamna Lake area. I'm also a tribal member of the village of the South Naknek Tribe. I also have a contract to provide advice to POP on Tubman Limited Partnership on village, regional, statewide, and native issues. I'd like to make a general comment regarding my opposition to Senate Bill 152. If passed, it would insert political decision-making into established regulatory structures. It would usurp the permitting authority of the state agencies. And finally, I believe that it would restrict mining throughout the region, regardless of land status. It represents poor public policy. It gives the authority of the sitting legislature to change the existing permitting process. And I know Rick Halpert liked that because he said we live on politics, but I think that it depends on which side of the fence you're on. As for the Alaska Peninsula Corporation, we believe that it violates APC property interests under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The Alaska Statehood Act, Section 4, provides, in part, said state and its people do agree and declare that they forever disclaim any right and title to any lands or other property, the right and title to which may be held by Indians, Eskimos, or Aleuts, or is held by the United States in trust. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Trifon.
I've been out for a long time, I don't know what happened, but, bye. Well, my boundary phone says that. Does this phone work here?
We can hear you very well, Mr. Anguson.
Very good. Thank you again, Donnie, for being patient with me.
No problem.
And I would like to say that I was held in trust by the United States in trust for said natives. Section 3 of ANCSA. I'm moving ahead too fast. I got kind of excited because I think that when you're last, you're running, everybody's looking at their watch, and I realize that, so I'm trying to move along as quickly as I can. Here we go. I just jumped ahead a page or two, and I shouldn't have, but that all such lands or other property, including fishing rights, the right to title to which may be held by said natives or is held by the United States in trust, for such natives shall be and remain under the absolute control of the United States until disposed under its authority. ANCSA 43 U.S.C. Section 1601 extinguished Aboriginal rights, but granted 44 million acres of land to the Alaska Native Regional Corporation, Village Corporation, and groups, with the understanding that the settlement would be accomplished with maximum participation by natives in decisions affecting their rights and property. That's under Section 2B of ANCSA. Section 3 of ANCSA makes clear that lands conveyed to village corporations are conveyed out of federal, not state ownership, to village corporations for the purpose of economic development, providing that village corporations are to hold, manage, invest lands, property, funds, and other rights and assets for and to for the benefit of the native village in accordance with the terms of ANCSA. APC has interest in the development of mining of mineral resources on and adjacent to its land within the Bristol Bay Salmon Reserve. Can the state of Alaska regulate mining or other activities on APC lands that were in federal ownership in 1972 when the reserve was created? We think the Statehood Act preempts such exercise as in violation of both Amendment 5 of the U.S. Constitution as well as Article 1, Section 7 and 15 of the Alaska Constitution. Senate Bill 152 proposes to require legislative approval of any metallic sulfide mining in the reserve where the mine or mining operation involves 1 square mile. The Alaska Peninsula Corporation has a prospect that covers 9 square miles and an economic interest in its development within the reserve, the Bad Lake Prospect. APC and all village corporations in the state of Alaska have a protectable property interest under Section 7I and 7J, if BBNC's ability to develop the Fog Lake prospect and other metallic sulfide prospects on native lands within the reserve. APC is one of the largest land owners within the reserve. We view Senate Bill 152 as nothing more than a giveaway to the sports lodges that threaten our ability to develop our lands and resources. Evidence is found in the letters of support to Senate Bill 152. There is no concern for the protection of our congressional mission. Rather, a support pump from those who trespass on our lands to pursue their own recreational activities. We recognize that BBNC supports Senate Bill 152, but we believe that this support is misplaced and that in doing so, BBNC is violating its responsibilities under ANCSA as one of the 12 economic engines of ANCSA. We've heard their testimony. They talked about the billion-dollar company that they are. All of the revenue is generated outside the state of Alaska, and a lot of their revenue is state generated in Alaska under resource development under Section 7I. So we know that you look at the number of investments they have in Bristol Bay, and you have to go a long way to find one. Ultimately, we believe that Senate Bill 152 exposes the state to enormous liabilities for inverse condemnation. Senate Bill 152 directly interferes with our legitimate investment-backed expectations in being able to develop our resources in a manner intended by Congress and our shareholders at the time of ANCSA, when our protectable Aboriginal rights were relinquished. APC recognizes the tremendous potential of mineral development both on its lands and on adjacent lands. Senate Bill 152 has passed would directly threaten that interest and substantially reduce the value of not only our investment, but the investments of many exploration companies who are taking enormous risks in exploration and development. What company would want to be held hostage to the political winds of a legislature? What inquiry has this committee made into the impact of Senate Bill 152? What basis is there for this proposed legislation other than to threaten Pebble's future exploration? APC has confidence in the process, but the process should not be threatened by the ex post facto actions of a politically motivated legislative body. Suppose that permitting for the Pebble prospect goes forward. Suppose that federal and state agencies determine that the prospect is permitted. Are you going to then require that the legislature would disprove the mining development? Suppose that BBNC comes to its senses, recognizes that its mineral interests are feasible to develop and the Fog Lake prospect is permitted. Not even Alaska would have enough money to pay for the natives of Alaska for the loss of revenues and APC for its thwarted expectations. And this would be to stop Pebble. This bill is short-sighted, it's wrong, it's constitutionally infirm, and it threatens the legitimate investment-backed expectations of the Alaska Peninsula Corporation. Thank you very much, Donnie, for allowing me to testify. If I've offended anyone, I apologize, but this is going to be a heated issue. It has been a heated issue, and I don't see the heat coming off the table yet.
Mr. Agerson, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Any questions of Mr. Agerson? We have no further questions for you, and we want to...
Thank you, Donnie. Thank you for the opportunity to testify again.
Take care, Tree
Bye.
Frog. We want to go ahead and make a note that we've got the four people that we invited to go ahead and testify on. The rest, we've got approximately 10 more people. We're going to have 3 minutes apiece for them to go ahead and testify. And so you ready to cut them off after 3 minutes? Okay, I'll do that. First one we've got is Richard King. Mr. King, are you on, sir?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead and identify yourself for the record, who you are affiliated with, and go with your testimony.
My name is Richard King. I'm the administrator for Aquap Village Council. I'm a resident of Bristol Bay, and I live on the Nishikak River, sir.
Good. Continue.
Okay. We support your Senate Bill 152. It's just we believe that the Senate has trust responsibility to the people of Bristol Bay. The people of Bristol Bay have spoken. Over 80% of the people don't want large-scale mining. Everybody's talking about pebble. Pebble is a really big issue. We also have Mill Rock on the other side of us. These mines that are in perpetuity are a great risk. I was born and raised in northern Minnesota. My dad worked at a strip mine for 39 and a half years. I was born and raised in a strip mine, and as young men, we traveled all over. Just go and look at the cold climate in North Minnesota, and you'll see that that is just chicken pox with mines. And my point being, and I guess I would direct this comment to Senator Menard with respect, if you want to see what mining does to fishing, just Google the state of Alaska fishing report on where it's safe to eat fish. I think you'll find that you pretty much, there's alerts all over northern Minnesota where it's safe to eat fish, where you shouldn't eat fish. Where I grew up, you're not even supposed to eat one fish a month out of that lake right next to the mine. And as a village administrator, I've been on the cutting edge of this thing for a long time. You know, I'm not going to switch the subject to jobs. I'm not going to tell you that the mining industry is an enhancement project for fish. Like I was saying, we believe that the Senate has a trust responsibility to the residents of Bristol Bay. This bill is site-specific to the Bristol Bay region. And I guess I'll stop there because I'm losing my train of thought.
Mr. King, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. I actually went to school in Duluth, so I saw the taconite mining that was going on there. Next we have...
go ahead.
Go ahead and have your final comment if you'd like.
Well, you say you're from Duluth. How long were you in Duluth?
No, I wasn't. I'm not from Duluth. I just went to school there.
I'm from north of there in a little town called Hoyt Lakes. And like I said, that northern region of Minnesota has very similar climate to Alaska. They get 40 below weather. And the lakes that are close to all these mines up there, the fish are no good in these lakes.
Mr. King, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next, we have Rachel Petro.
Thank you.
In Anchorage with Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. Ms. Petro, are you on, ma'am?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Olson and Senator Menard. For the record, my name is Rachel Petro, and I serve as the President and CEO of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. And the Alaska Chamber is the statewide Chamber of Commerce, which represents hundreds of diverse businesses from across Alaska, as well as thousands of working Alaskans working in those businesses. Each year, the Alaska Chamber sets its legislative priorities during its fall, what we call legislative policy forum. And supporting an efficient, predictable permitting process has long been an issue of importance to our members. This year is no different. The Alaska Chamber supports a significant increase in responsible natural resource development and encourages the Alaska Legislature and Administration to uphold our current strong regulatory and permitting laws and policies so that we can facilitate additional exploration, site development, employment, infrastructure research, and natural resource production in Alaska. We'll just add here that, again, as a statewide Chamber of Commerce, we encompass everything from fishing to tourism to oil and gas and everything in between, including retail. We believe that Senate Bill 152 would insert political decision-making and to establish regulatory structures by basically usurping the permitting authority of state agencies that's well-established. Citadel 152 would restrict mining throughout the Bristol Bay region regardless of land status in that process, potentially. So we believe that it's basically poor public policy and would establish a dangerous precedent for all future resource development activities in Alaska. It would basically allow the legislature to bypass the predictable existing permitting process at any time. Again, we believe this sets a dangerous precedent. Alaska's existing permitting regulatory structure is rigorous, science-based, transparent, and it's predictable, even if it does take a while. So leaving land management and resource development to the subjectivity of any particular legislature will further negatively affect the business climate in Alaska by taking away that predictability of the process that business looks for. If there is a problem with Alaska's existing permitting structure, the Alaska Chamber would prefer to get the process fixed. So with that, that's the end of my comments. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. And we do currently oppose Senate Bill 152. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Ms. Petro, thanks for coming out this afternoon. Next, we have Dennis Andrews from Nisteyahook. Mr. Andrews, are you on, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is, for the record, Dennis Andrews, Sr. I'm from village of Nisteyahook, right on the Nisteyahook River, and we'll be first affected if that mine is developed. It's very important for our community. I've got 500-plus people that live in our community, and they rely on subsistence foods from right from towards spring to fall, seasonally. They're real heavy on gathering subsistence way of life for bottom lines. Bristol Bay is our dinner table, and it has been for thousands of years. And to the fishery, my father was a reindeer herder, plus a sailboat fisherman. And up to today, from cotton fishing, we're using slush ice, we're improving, the boys are really improving on the salmon for the markets, so that, you know, it's too high a risk. It's just unacceptable for that big of mine to develop in our headwaters. Like I just stated earlier, sir, where my grandkids and their grandkids, I like to see Bristol Bay continue to be our dinner table. Maybe a short version, if that mine ever goes through or if it's permitted or something, think about this. Don't bother to buy any rods or anything for your grandchildren or anything, because they'll have no place to go fishing. Thank you, sir. That's all I got.
Thanks very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Andrews. Next, we have Thomas Tilden from Dillingham. Mr. Tilden, are you on, sir?
Yes, I am. For the record, my name is Thomas Tilden, and I'm the Chugun Tribal Chief, and I would like to speak in favor of Senate Bill number 152. I believe that extraordinary mine requires extraordinary legislation. And I think that that one of the things that I need to point out is that when this mine was first proposed, I was for the mine. I was for the jobs. I wanted the economic opportunity for our region. And so I was pro-mine. After I got into a little research and did my homework and took a look at the mines, the probability of what might happen, what can happen, and what has happened in other mines, my mind changed. I went to the mining companies first at one of their meetings up in Illiana, New Haven. And I said, you promise us jobs. Put it in writing. Guarantee us 10%, 20%. And they said no. I said 5, 2.5. And they said no. They would not guarantee us jobs. And it was just recently I was flying to Seattle, Washington, and next to me was a lady that was on her way to Canada, and she had a job recording numbers that probably a local probably could have had. So there's no guarantee that the locals are going to always get the jobs. Maybe during the exploratory, they will. The other thing that's pretty unique, I think, that this bill addresses is that we're not talking about regular land. We're talking about an upland wetlands. And just to prove that, you could go to Northern Dynasty's website and see how many holes that they dug out in that wetlands area to measure the water. There's a lot of water in that area. It's very unique in regards to the location of where this mine is. And it's all downhill from there. So any contamination that's going to happen, whether it's from the water or from the air, it's all going downhill. We're talking about a unique area that has really high winds. The high winds blow rocks off those mountains. I encourage you to take Lisa up on her offer to go up there and take a look at that mine, because then you will be able to see the wetlands and the windy area. And I say pass this piece of legislation for the future of the state, because let's look at the fiscal probabilities of the state. Eventually, the oil, gas, and the mining is going to run out.
Mr. Tilden, if you could go ahead and conclude your testimony. Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next, we have Gary Klein. Mr. Klein, are you on, sir?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gary Klein. I live in Gillingham. I'm here on behalf of Ninumta Aluxtai, caretakers of our land. Ninumta Aluxtai supports Senate Bill 152 that seeks to amend the Bristol Bay Fisheries Reserve that include provisions to safeguard the reserve from the development of any large-scale metallic sulfide mining operation that impact the water in the reserve. We ask that the Senate Community and Regional Affairs on SB 152 act and move it out of committee. Ninumta Aluxtai is a nonprofit organization in the Bristol Bay region whose members include nine ANCSA village corporations and their respective tribal governments in their communities. For our members and the shareholders or tribal members, they are elected to represent their villages. And like Dennis Andrews said from Nisiok, the Bristol Bay rivers and land provide the food for their dinner table. Therefore, efforts such as SB 152 provide the needed protection within the fisheries reserve that our members feel are necessary. For our members, the future is on a collision course between the subsistence foods that our members rely on against the many mining claims that have potential to impact the Nishigaak and Kwajak watershed. For many, even in the legislature, our organization is characterized by the doom and gloom, or that we are raising fear amongst our members, or even our latest calling is that we are legal terrorists. We are pretty open with our argument. We are not willing to trade habitat that supports millions of salmon and all other wildlife that is enhanced by the nutrients brought by salmon from the oceans for a big hole in the ground. We are not at ease with the current administration, who has responsibility to ensure one resource is not traded for another. We know from our own experience that the very government agency with inspection oversight was not diligent in their inspections and allowed water to be taken from not permitted with the temporary water use permit. We also know that our government agency that believes only freshwater fish reside and allowed for water to be taken from the stream during drilling exploration had salmon residing and spawning in the very stream that the water was removed.
Mr. Klein, can you go ahead and finish up with your remarks?
We need the passage of SB 152. And also, I'd like to comment, I'd like to thank BBNC. There's a lot of talk about BBNC and their investments leaving the region. Well, I just graduated with a bachelor's with international business in May 2010, moved back, and I'm very thankful for the funding that they provided me to get a higher education.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Herman Nelson. Mr. Nelson, are you on, sir?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Herman Nelson, Sr. I am from Bristol Bay region. My hometown is Kalinic. I live 60 miles north of Dillingham on the Nishigaak River, the last village up the river, 12 miles from the mouth of the Mount Bettner River, 50 air miles west of the proposed pebble mine. I am president of the Kalinak Native Limited and the new Kalinak Village Council. I served at least 15 years as president of both boards. I'm not going to take a lot of your time, but just listening, I see there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of people said what they had to say, but I do support Senate Bill 152, an act requiring legislative approval that affects our water, our land, flowing into the Bristol Bay Fisheries Reserve. I hope that the legislative passes this act, Senate Bill number 152. It protects the following. And when I say it protects the following, I'm thinking about the future of our kids and their kids in years to come. And here's a number of reasons why we should protect and pass Senate Bill 152. It protects our fisheries, it protects our land, it protects our water, it protects our fish and game, it protects our edible foods, berries, and other stuff. And Mr. Chairman, you live up north and you know exactly what I'm talking about. It also protects clean air. Senate Bill 152, an act requiring legislative approval of a plan of operation for a large-scale metallic sulfate mine. Again, I support Senate Bill 152, and thank you for letting me speak supporting Senate Bill 152.
Mr. Nelson, thanks for coming out this afternoon. Next, we have Kim Williams from Dillingham. Ms. Williams, are you on now?
Yes, I am. My name is Kimberly Williams, for the record. I live in Dillingham. I am the executive director of Ninumta Lukstai. I am the third chief of the Chilhowee Tribal Council, and I am the board president of the Dillingham City School District. But more importantly, I am a mother of six children, and I hope to have many, many future grandchildren in the future. And I support the passage of SB 152, and I urge this committee to move it out of the committee. In direct response to the Chamber of Commerce testimony regarding the problem with the regulatory process, I think Gary Klein in our office spoke to the problems associated with the regulation or with the process itself. In DNR, it takes oversight by others outside of the agency to get the department to even move about their permits. Regarding fish in our streams, local people know there are fish in our streams, yet Fish and Game says, oh, there are only freshwater fish there. There are no salmon there. That's the problem. And if you can fix that, then we would be moving somewhere. But we don't see any movement by the legislature or by the department. We see one industry trading for another. And people will say, we're not going to trade. Our governor will say, we're not going to trade one industry for another. But doggone it, there are already declines in fish populations up in those three river systems. And it's from Pebble's own data that shows the declines in those rivers. And so if you can fix the regulatory process, we will be involved for our future and our future grandchildren. So I want you guys to move this out of committee, and I urge you to do so. Thank you.
The last person we're going to have testify this afternoon, we had a number of people that are online that have to, but if we're running up against a deadline of 5 o'clock, is Abe Williams. Mr. Williams, are you on, sir?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Regional Affairs Committee. I'm speaking to you. My name is Abe Williams on behalf of Nuna Resources. I'm the president of Nuna Resources, as well as the president for the Native Corporation Pogvik, located on the Shinaknik and the Quijac ranges. I'm here on behalf of Nuna Resources to Senate Bill 152. This decision-making process into an established regulatory structure, a regulatory structure that we as citizens as well as look forward to being a part of, would like the opportunities.
Mr. Williams, you're coming in broken. You're going to have to either step up to the closer to the mic, or for some reason we're not getting you clearly.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Can you hear me back there?
Yeah, much better now.
Anyway, on behalf of Mineral Resources, I'd like to testify in opposition to this particular Senate Bill 152. This sets a bad precedent. It takes the regulatory structure that we have right now and turns it into a political folly, if you will. You know, Mineral Resources was established to proactively advocate for a sustainable economy in Bristol Bay, including the support for responsible resource development and advocating for due process. We feel that due process is the key to the mechanism for resource diversification out in the region. And with the dwindling population out here, we're losing our voices as well as our children and our communities. With schools closing down, we're losing as well our ownership into the local fishery out here. It's a very big concern.
Mr. Williams, we're going to have to close at 5 o'clock. Do you have any concluding comments?
No, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you guys, and I look forward to a senior decision at some point in time here soon.
Thank you for coming out this afternoon. I apologize to Mr. Hurley, Mr. Fogles, Mr. Crawford, and Mr. Kraft. We're going to have to hold you until next time. We're having another committee and Regional Affairs Committee meeting on Thursday. At that time, we'll go ahead and adjourn. Until then, this meeting is adjourned.